Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Thank you for tuning in for another one of our 50-minute sessions, or our 50-minute hour, as we like to say in the therapy world. I'm glad you joined us. Welcome to those of you who have just found our program, our weekly community building exercise in sharing what goes on for us in our daily lives, our struggles, our triumphs, things we do well, things that we'd like to do better. Right before I went on the air, I was in three or four different conversations with different people, which was apropos for my subject for today. But it was interesting because I knew we were going to talk about communications that I recognized that my tone with each of the people that I was talking to, some were on text, some were in person, some were on the phone. I mean, it's all simultaneously because we are a connected technology world. And I noticed that my roles with each person, of course, determine how I speak with each of them, whether it's through text or on the phone or in person. We have different ways that we interact and communicate with each other based on our relationship to the people that we're speaking to. And I recognized a couple things. One, that being present for each conversation changes throughout the day how present I'm able to be for the conversation. And I thought, wow, as a therapist, you would think that my main goal all day long would be to be 24/7 present with every person I talk to, since that generally is the role of a therapist, is to be really focused in. But I, like everyone else, tend to have multiple things going on in my brain at the same time. And I really noticed that how I kind of come in and out of my conversations with my focus, or how really present I am. And I thought, I wonder what I can do to make myself more fully engaged in each of my conversations, and if that's something that's actually possible. I don't know. Unlike most people, maybe I spend the majority of my day managing or tending to a variety of different connections in my life. But I think that this whole idea of communication, how we share and express ourselves to others, is really at the key to our mental health. And I think it's important to talk about those skills of communication and social building skills, because quite often it's our inability to express ourselves clearly, concisely, in some sort of order, that prevents us from having the relationships, from building the connections that we want to build. So I invite your thoughts on that today. You can call in at 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And the idea behind this show is to build a community of people who are supporting each other on our journey, right? To talk about those things that we struggle with. Because more often than not, if there's something that's going on for you and you talk about it, there's going to be people listening or people in your life that have that same experience and will think, yeah, that's me too. I struggle with that. And it will help them to deal a little bit better with their lives, or maybe they'll call in and want to talk about it too. But the more we talk about those things in our lives that get us stuck, the less daunting they become. And so I love the therapeutic benefit of having this time every week to check in on the air. Radio can be a very healing medium. And so that's what we get to do every single week. This idea of communication, though, is really foremost for me, because this idea of human connections has been popping up everywhere. Every time I turn on the radio, I'm hearing a blurb about connections and how we all want to stay closely connected. Even if we're talking about technology, we're talking about connections and communication. Because, and I don't know, maybe I made this up, but I think I heard that the majority of the apps that are created for technology right now are about making better connections, whether it's Skyping or FaceTiming or being able to text better or being able to stay connected with people in some way. We drive our interactions through technology. And then also, there's such a drive right now to looking at the epidemic of loneliness in our culture. There was a study done at UCLA that 35% of those 45 and older report chronic loneliness, feelings of chronic loneliness, which is up from 20% a decade ago. That's a concern. I mean, the chronic loneliness impacts us in so many ways, but mostly this feeling of isolation or feeling disconnected impacts our mental health, impacts our well-being, increases our sense of depression or feelings of anxiety or isolation. And the thing that happens is that the more isolated or lonely that we feel, the harder it is for us to reach out and communicate with others. You know, our human connections are determined by our quality of conversation. And it's interesting to me because if the main point in our life is making connections, why don't we spend more time honing our communication skills? Why don't we teach our children how to make friends and how to look someone in the eye or speak clearly and concisely, what it takes to exchange information? We really don't do a lot of work on actual communication and social skills. We kind of expect that because we're humans, we're somehow going to get it. And I think that, that gets us into trouble in some ways. So what do you think about that? You can join the conversation at any time. Our number here is 805-781-3875. I am Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. And today my mind is all on communication, but it's on a lot of things, on human connections, on how we relate to each other, on how we, you know, look at our lives in context, that when we're struggling with feelings of depression or anxiety or isolation, or if our relationships are struggling and we don't know why our 13-year-old is driving us crazy or why we're having a hard time communicating with our spouse or relating to a loved one, you know, we have to look at our lives in context. Are we making the time to communicate with those that we love? You know, it's interesting that for couples, there's been a lot of studies on how much time couples actually spend talking to each other. And they found that over the course of a week, some couples speak to each other less than 20 minutes, not each day, the entire week total. And a lot of that is just exchanging information about who's watching the kids or who's picking someone up or who's getting milk at the store. So the time we spent really communicating one-on-one is a lot lower than we expect. So what do we do about that? What are the basic communication skills that we need to really be able to relate to each other? Because you think, you know, communication should be really simple. There's really only three things that happen. I send a message, you receive the message, and respond to the message. I mean, it sounds like it's really simple, right? Unfortunately, there's a lot of ways that things can go wrong in the course of that sending the message, receiving the message, and responding. And one of the first things that goes wrong is that we don't interpret or hear what's being said to us in the way that the message was intended to be sent. And right there, if we're not hearing the message the way the speaker intended to send it, we can get ourselves into trouble. So how do we fix that? Haley, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, dear. I'm just wanted to make some comments. I love the idea of what you're talking about in the context of the two shows that just finished about ethics.
Yes.
The TED shows and communication. Basically, I'm hearing you speak about mindfulness, you know, from the Buddhist perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I've bought for myself personally with my personal relationships, I bring it a little step farther as to the physical when I'm communicating with others, in that there's so many unspoken things that we as humans read about the other, you know, when we're communicating. But myself, as being a gospel vocalist, I really have to be mindful to watch my tone of voice, because my tone of voice can, you know, communicate things I'm not necessarily trying to communicate. So in other words, my voice can, you know, bring across my nervous state or my physical state when I'm not trying to communicate that to my loved one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are things. It's all about just being mindful, I guess, just taking a breath before you communicate. We're so sped up,
yes,
with everything. You know, now that's as to the personal relationships, but I really like the idea of just discussing about communications and ethics when we're communicating with others, be it in a business relationship, a workplace relationship, that these cues and signals can come through outside of the spoken word. And a lot of times it's what you omit that can have an effect on the other in communications.
It's so true. And it's funny because you bring up a couple really great points. One of them is the idea of the nonverbal communication. And it's funny because 65 to 85% of how we interact is through our nonverbal. So really 15% of what we say is part of, you know, the importance of the communication. Much more of what goes back and forth between people is the nonverbal, which I find fascinating too, because we're in such an era of texting, myself included, that we have a lot of conversations in my classes about how, if, you know, nonverbal communications is 65 to 85% of our interaction, how is texting going to change that? So that's one piece. And the other piece that you brought up that is fascinating is about the tone of voice, because they've done a lot of studies about attraction and what brings couples together. And, you know, 35% of attraction is on the tone and pace of our voice. And I think that's something that we'd very rarely, unless you were a vocalist like yourself or you get paid to speak for a living, that you would be concerned about. I don't think a lot of people spend a lot of time thinking about the tone or rate of their voice mm-hmm. when it comes to making connections with others.
Well, what's funny for me is that in my personal relationships, I'm not mindful about my voice because mm-hmm. my voice is very powerful and I'm animated, my personality, so I just kind of let it fly. But when I'm performing, you know, I'm mindful of the music and the modulation, the mindset is there. Or if I'm approaching someone on a professional level, let's say for the first time. But generally, if I know someone and I feel comfortable with them, you know, I just let it fly. But I think we just need to be mindful of, like, what you said. You just said the percentages of how much, and I had no idea it was even that high, is nonverbal, and that's going on all the time. And that's going on when we are texting. We might not have figured out exactly how, but there's things that are going on. Like, for instance, if I'm texting with someone, and then the speed of which we are replying to each other.
Yeah, that is a message. You know, the use of emoticons, although my children think I'm terrible at them, but we've, you know, add ways into our text to kind of interpret what we're feeling or what our intention is. But I appreciate your thoughts, Haley. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. So what are your thoughts about communication? Are you good at it? Or what are some ways that you might struggle? What about you? Brian, how's your communication skills these days?
I guess pretty good.
So Brian is there answering your phone calls today. If you want to give us a message, give us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. You'll get a chance to talk to Brian. If you don't want to come on the air, he can pass the message on to me. But what do you think your strengths are, Brian? What is your best communication skill?
Probably listening would be mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think not enough people do that in basic conversation.
It's a real skill, isn't it?
Yeah.
We think that we're hearing people when they're speaking to us, but there's so much that goes on in our heads while we're listening. We're either thinking about what our reply is going to be, or we're thinking about what our argument is or how to defend ourselves. It's interesting because we're not trained culturally to listen with mindfulness, which was the theme that Haley brought up, that there really has to be an intention behind our listening skills. You know, sometimes we're just listening to get the brief synopsis or get to the point of things. But unfortunately, we end up spending the majority of our life only listening for the cliff notes of conversations, right? We end up saying, oh yeah, I know what you're saying. Or, let me talk about me right now.
Exactly. Gets turned back to them. If you're not listening, then you just carry on your own conversation and the other person's not even really involved.
No, you end up both having conversations with yourself,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So how do we improve those listening skills? You know, how do we set our intention in our lives that are so busy, as Haley mentioned, and as we all notice that, how do we take the time to really step down and look at someone and listen to what they're saying? One of the things we can do is instead of listening with the intention of responding, right? Listening for where you want to talk back, to ask the person before you start the conversation even, how can I best listen to you? Do you need me to help you fix a problem? Do you need me just to listen and keep my mouth shut? Do you need me to, you know, get on your corner, in your corner? Do you need me to help you figure something out? To kind of find out what kind of listening is required in the moment. It takes another 30 seconds, but it can really change the tone of your relationship or the tone of your interaction if you understand what kind of listening skills you need to use. But quite often we don't take the time to find out how we should be listening, and we end up getting into this situation where someone might be trying to tell us something that really matters to them, but we start asking questions about things we're interested in, and we take the speaker away from where they wanted to go. So listening can be at a core of our communication, something that we can first work on and work on with our kids to help them improve their relationships. It's about 2:15, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Love to hear from you at 805-781-3875. We're talking about communication skills.
That number again is 781-3875. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist here on KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock after The Reluctant Therapist, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, the Peabody Award-winning weekday magazine of contemporary arts and issues. It's one of public radio's most popular programs. Then at 4, American Public Media's Marketplace presents news on business, economics, and money for the rest of us. And at 4:30, All Things Considered offers a balanced perspective on the events of the day, combining headline newscasts with personal, in-depth reporting that has become the hallmark of public radio. That's coming up today on KCBX. That number again to call in and talk to the Reluctant Therapist is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875.
Thank you for listening. Today we are talking about communication and communication skills and social building skills. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the keys to communication. I mentioned earlier that it seems like a very simple process, right? That I am speaking to you and you're hearing my words and then you're forming your thoughts based on my words and you're usually going to respond back or not. But there is this huge step that needs to happen to make sure that our communication is successful, and that is in how the message is received. And when couples end up in counseling or when families end up in counseling or when we have trouble with our friends, generally it starts from this breakdown in our communication, this breakdown in our ability to send a message clearly and in such a way that the listener understands what it is we're trying to say. And even though that feels like it can be a complex mess, and it's amazing how quickly communication gets off track when we think we're hearing something that's not really what the intention is, and we respond maybe with anger or defensiveness or sadness, but that really wasn't the intention. One of the skills that we use in therapy is this metacommunication. And it requires taking a moment, taking a beat after someone speaks to us to check in and say, well, here's what I heard you say, and I just want to make sure that that was what you intended. And to take a second to check in about what the message is that's being sent can do an amazing amount of good in keeping your communication steady or even to keeping the relationship strong. The thing that's interesting, though, is that there's a lot of trust that has to go into our communication and our interactions with others. We're very vulnerable every time we open our mouth. I have to trust that when I'm speaking to you on Tuesdays from 2 to 3, that we kind of have this bond with each other, that you know my intention is to send out caring thoughts or to share caring radio with you, to bring out my best intentions. So the trust that you have in me is that I'm coming to you with my best intentions. My trust is that you're going to hear my words as being given to you with the best intentions and respond in kind. But that isn't always the case. And so when we think we've heard something from someone that doesn't seem right or makes us react in a way that might be hostile or angry or feel defensive, if we can take a moment to take a breath and say, here's what I heard you say. Is this what you meant? And give the speaker an opportunity to say, oh, no, that's not at all what I was trying to say. I actually wanted to tell you this. Or, well, yes, actually, I did want to, you know, talk to you about this more serious issue. Taking that moment for metacommunication can really steer relationships into a healthier direction. With couples, a lot of the problem has to do with some of the gender differences in communication. You know, there are differences in the way masculine and feminine speakers relate to each other. And that doesn't necessarily mean that males and females speak differently with each other, but we have masculine tendencies in our speaking and more feminine tendencies in our speaking. And the two differences can actually really get in the way of connecting. And when couples come into counseling, one of the primary problems that they are usually experiencing is a breakdown in communication. They'll say, we're having a breakdown in communication. We're not relating anymore. Generally, the masculine speaker will say, all she does is talk, 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 talk. And the feminine speaker will say, he never talks at all. He doesn't listen to me. And so how do we get two very divergent styles of speakers to come together on the same page and really hear each other? Feminine speakers tend to use communication as a way of building connection. They want to create more intimacy. They want to disclose things about themselves and tell their story in a way of getting closer to others. Masculine speakers, on the other hand, see communication as more about information sharing. They don't like to use a lot of words. If little words can get the job done, it's much more about maintaining power, trying to fix issues. Communication is much more pragmatic for masculine speakers. So imagine when you put a feminine speaker and a masculine speaker together, the feminine speaker might be trying to talk about her day, what's going on, how she's feeling about her relationships and friends. And the masculine speaker is hearing this and seeing, oh, I need to fix this. She needs to feel better. I want to, you know, get to the heart of this issue. I want to go in and take care of business. And so when the masculine speaker responds to the feminine speaker who's trying to build connection, it causes conflict because the feminine speaker feels like, wait, I didn't ask you to fix me. I just wanted you to listen to me. So how do we work with that? Anita, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Glad you called.
I was kind of reluctant calling you, but I moved to the United States like 14 years ago. So I had to learn all about people, culture, the language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a very optimistic person. And usually when I communicate to people, I always say something positive about them.
Mm-hmm.
But then, after all, I realize I also feel some negativity about them. And so, but then I'm reluctant to communicate that,
mm-hmm.
and not to be the person who points out the negativity. So I wanted to know from you, what do you think about that?
Well, I would like to know, what are some of the main cultural differences you saw in how we communicate in the United States as compared to where you grew up?
It's hard to say, because I have been here 14 years, so, and in order to comply, I thought, and it's a part of my character too,
mm-hmm.
I thought I have to be positive. Mm-hmm. I mean, only saying positive things, because from my childhood I was not really allowed to say negative
mm-hmm. to things. Express things that might have more meaning to you, to always mm-hmm. just kind of stay kind of shallow and nice and mm-hmm. never really get too deep. And it's interesting because what you're talking about is assertive communication as opposed to passive communication, and that mm-hmm. unfortunately for women in our culture, there's a lot more support for a passive style of communication. Women aren't encouraged to speak out or share their mm-hmm. truth or speak their mind, and there is a resistance that comes back. You know, who do you think mm-hmm. you are, or why are you mm-hmm. speaking out? Right, that's not your
exactly.
place, and that can be really confusing because. Mm-hmm. On one hand, we're a culture that really supports the individual, right? We tell our children to speak out and you're an individual mm-hmm. and be who you are. And yet when we try to do that, quite often we're shut down.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly. And I grew up that way too. So it's not new to me.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get to know people here, because they're different in one way, and so they grew up differently than I too, so I just kind of was listening to and just saying, not really, I wasn't really sincere then, what I was thinking about them.
Right, and in order to really make your relationship feel authentic, it feels mm-hmm. important to speak from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so yeah. One of the things I encourage you, Anita, is the idea that I brought about metacommunication, about clarifying our intention about what we're saying. And I wonder what it might be like to say to someone, you know, I want to share something with you and I want to make sure that you hear my intention when I say it. And mm-hmm. then, you know, share what you had to say and then ask them, uh-huh. how did you feel about what I just said? Because all those little steps we generally don't take the time to do when we talk to people to clarify how they heard what we said or how they felt about what we said before we walk away. We kind of leave people to deal with whatever they're thinking or feeling after they spoke with us on their own.
That's a wonderful point. I never thought about that. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, so I encourage you to give it a shot and then give me a call back and let me know how it worked for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
I'm proud of your courage for calling in.
Even with my accent.
I love your accent. You communicate beautifully. Have a great day.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about communication or maybe some areas that you're struggling in your relationships and would like to talk about how you might improve those relationships or improve your communication skills. Where are some ways that you might get stuck in your interactions? Or how is it that you can get your partner to talk more? Or what are the things that we need to teach our children so that they're more effective in building their own relationships and communicating more successfully? You can call in at 805-781-3875 and talk to Brian. He'd love to hear from you. Hi, Linda. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I thank you for taking my call. And my question was actually prompted by Brian when you asked him what his best skill was, and he said listening.
Yes.
And it triggered in my mind that I have a neighbor who's in her 80s, about 84, and whenever we have a conversation, she will interrupt me and then take it off on her tangent, or if it's a conversation that she doesn't want to hear any more about, she just shuts you off mentally, like, click.
Yes.
And it's driving me crazy.
And so you want to know what to do about that.
Yeah, because it's very frustrating, and I feel like a real non-person. So, it's very alienating.
So tell me what you would like to do to fix it. What would be your first instinct?
Well, my first instinct was just to say, listen, now you've interrupted me three times so far at this dinner, and I'd really like you to hear me out when I talk. Mm-hmm. And it just right over her head.
Right, even to confront it.
Oh, yeah, it just doesn't make any difference. She just decides that, you know, if you're deciding how much you're going to leave with tip, and you're just kind of working it out and saying, okay, it's going to be a $4 tip, and click, she's out. And then when you leave the $4 tip, it's, you left $4.
You know, and it's funny because I have different feelings about that, those interactions. There's a piece of me that thinks, well, I guess when I get to 84, everyone better just listen to me, because at that point I feel like I've paid my dues, right? So there's a little bit of that. With age comes this entitlement to shut the rest of the world out. There's another part of me that thinks, hey, I wonder how her hearing skills are at this point. Like, I wonder if she can hear everything, because oftentimes when we age and our hearing starts to slip, and we have too much pride to say, hey, I'm having a hard time hearing the conversation. So we tend to kind of just talk over or keep talking to mask the fact that we're not really hearing. And then the third piece that pops up for me is maybe a little fear that she might have in having a conversation that she's not comfortable with and not really knowing where to go with that. And so I'm wondering how it might be to address those three pieces.
Okay, she's really very good about telling you when she does not have her hearing aid on.
Okay,
she'll
good.
Say, you have to talk louder. Mm-hmm. I don't have my hearing aid on. So you acquiesce and just speak louder.
Exactly.
About the entitlement. Yeah, there's some entitlement there, but, you know, she's kind of alienated just about everybody about now.
And that becomes a real issue, right? If we're talking about a life of losing connections, we don't want people to end up isolated and lonely, so this is something she might need to hear. So then the third question is, then how do we say things in such a way that people can actually hear us and not feel defensive? And I kind of keep falling back to my theme of meta communication today of, you know, clarifying our intention before we speak. I don't know her name, but say it's Betty. And you say, so Betty, I really enjoy spending time talking with you, but oftentimes I feel like it's just one-sided, and that makes me feel hurt in a way that you might not be interested in some of the things I have to say. And and all you can do is throw it out there, and she'll either hear that and say, oh my, I don't want to discount you, I want to hear your story, or she'll say, no, I don't, right? Minimize it. No, I don't. You're just imagining things. I'm always listening to you. And then the best you can do at that point is say, well, you may feel that you're listening, but you're not, and I feel this way. And then if she says, well, I'll do better, I'll try to listen better, and then she starts to interrupt you once again, you can say, no, Betty, Remember, you promised you'd listen to me, and I'm feeling unheard. And I think it takes a little more effort in our hearts to communicate than we think it should. And I think that's one of the reasons that we tend to shut down or discount people or give up on relationships, because really making a human connection actually takes a lot more work and energy than we think it should.
So, on both sides.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're talking about my work and energy. You know, I can be empathetic because someday I will be 84 also.
I hope I am too.
But I like that about the work and energy on her part too. It's kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah, it is. And I think that unless we take the risk in sharing our true feelings with someone, we can't ever expect anything more from the people in our lives, right?
Right.
Because we can only connect as deeply as we're willing to open our hearts and speak.
Yes. Okay, I like that, and I can go with that.
I hope so, and I hope you'll call me back and let me know how it goes.
Oh, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening, Linda. And thank you for listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. It's 2:30, and we'll be back to take more of your calls about communication, listening, gender differences, or anything else that's on your mind today.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist here on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Here's a highlight from the KCBX community calendar. There is an antique show and sale this Saturday and Sunday hosted by the South County Historical Society. The show at the South County Regional Center in Arroyo Grande is a benefit for the society. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. Today on Wall Street, the Dow closed up 99 points. More on that and all the day's business news coming up on Marketplace at 4 o'clock here on KCBX. Then at 4:30 on All Things Considered, a Somali court has convicted an alleged rape victim and journalist who interviewed her of insulting the government, and how traditional book publishers are trying to keep up with changes in the industry. Join Robert Siegel and Audie Cornish at 4:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News here on KCBX. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist. The phone number again to call in and speak with her is 781-3875.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I do welcome your calls and information and feedback, your thoughts about communication and listening skills, you know, because it is at the forefront of our ability to make connections with others in our lives is to be able to communicate clearly and concisely ourselves. You know, one of our jobs or our quests in life is to find our people. I think one of the things that gets difficult for our children is that we send them off to school when they're young and we say, okay, everybody is your friend. Go out and make friends. And we expect that somehow amidst all of the, you know, other 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 year olds that they're interacting with, that they're going to make best friends. And then we continue that expectation throughout their lives and our lives that, you know, they should know how to connect with everyone, that everyone's going to be our friend. But I think one of the things that we find out, especially as our kids reach junior high, and then all of a sudden as parents we're saying, you know what, not everybody's your friend, because it becomes very clear that there are certain kids or groups that we don't want our children to interact with. And so now that message of everyone's your friend, go out and make friends, you know, be nice to everyone, starts to change. And we say, now be a little more selective about who you're going to be friends with, right? Be a little more selective about who you're going to spend time with or who you're going to tell your secrets to, because it's not safe to tell our secrets or our story to every single person. And then as we get older, we start to realize that that group of people that we can tell our secrets to or tell our story to or be our true selves with gets really smaller and smaller and much more select. And so we kind of go through this process of weeding out in our lives. Although it's important to know how to make small talk and business conversation and professional contacts, when it comes to intimacy, when it comes to intimate conversation, you know, it's not a huge group of people that we are going to share our intimate thoughts and feelings with. It's probably not a good idea to, because we can't expect a large group of people or every person we meet to be able to hear our story or hold our story or relate to our story. And so one of the magic things that you experience in life, or I have experienced in life, is when you find your people, right? You find someone who you don't have to measure your words with. You don't have to think about what's going to come out of your mouth. You can just talk. You can just flow. You feel accepted and heard. I mean, that's a magic moment in our life, and it doesn't happen all the time. You know, we're lucky if it happens a few times in our life, let alone every week or every day. So this idea of who we trust with our story and who we communicate with and how we communicate with each person really belongs to us. That's our personal responsibility to know what is the appropriate way to communicate with an individual at a specific time. So, Brad, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to relate a story about, is it Marshall Rosenthal with his nonviolent communication?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a seminar a few years ago in Santa Barbara with him when he was here. And it's probably about 5 or 6 years or better. And phenomenal. I just came away from that just going, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable information of how to stay present and listen and kind of listen between the lines,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it. But I turned my daughter on to this a couple years ago. I gave her a 4-CD set of these. And she's a pharmacist that works for the VA in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to apply that to working with a lot of the vets that have the post-traumatic shock syndrome or whatever it is.
Traumatic stress disorder, yes.
And she was just saying that she couldn't believe how good it worked and how fantastic it is, you know, that she got the empathy to listen, but yet still get her point across. And she said it helped her immensely in her job place because she's right on the front lines with that stuff.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, we downplay how important it is to be able to relate and listen to people on all sorts of levels. You know, we assume that just because words are coming out of our mouth that we're somehow, you know, connecting with other people. But there's so many more nuanced things in actually listening to someone when they're talking to us, right, and sharing their story. We have to look at their facial expressions and how they're carrying their body and what are the things that they're not saying to us, right? We're hearing words. And
exactly.
We're hearing the unspoken words. So can you tell me just a key point from the seminar that has stood out for you over the years?
Well, you know, it was really interesting because the universe really does supply. At that time, I was working in construction and have all my life. Mm-hmm. And the next day, I go to a job site out in Goleta, and it's a meeting between all the subcontractors and everything, and it's total chaos, and everybody's at each other's throats. They're yelling and screaming. It was a gnarly Monday morning. I walked in, I listened to this, I'm going, okay, now let me see if I hear you right over here. You need this, and you need that, and you want. And they all look at me, and they go, "Would you go to some hippie seminar or something?" Brian?
Yeah.
I said, "Well, pretty much." Totally lightened everything up, and we were able to communicate and work together.
So it sounds like just by taking the time to metacommunicate, which is my theme word of the day, trying to clarify what every person's message was, right? This is what you're trying to say. This is what you're trying to say. Are we on the same page? It took the whole tenor of the experience down a notch.
Exactly. And it was a perfect, I mean, it was a Monday morning after the seminar, and I was just blown away going, wow, that worked really well.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you shared that because I think, especially being a masculine speaker, which I appreciate calling in and sharing those thoughts, because I think that we don't encourage masculine speakers, especially, to take the moment to talk about, you know, how are you feeling when you say this? Or what are you really trying to say to me at the workplace? And imagine how much more productive we'd be if everyone just took a moment to say, I'm not really angry, I just am not being heard. Or, you know, I hear what you're saying, but maybe I'm misunderstanding. And it takes, an extra 10 seconds.
Exactly.
Brad, I really appreciate your call, and I hope you'll call in and share your thoughts again.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Hi, Judy. You're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Oh, my daughter, who's 22 and a single mother, and our communication, sometimes my daughter comes off like gangbusters. She will just lay into me, and sometimes she just absolutely just swears at me. And sometimes, you know, I hang up the phone after talking to her, and I just dissolve into tears. And it's like, you know, if something goes wrong with her son, she blames me, saying that I'm allowing him to get away with everything, which I don't. I draw the line with him when I babysit. And I'm at the point where if I call her, I'm not sure how she's going to respond, if it's going to be pleasant or if she's just, you know, I don't know.
I can hear in your voice this is really upsetting to you.
Yes.
I'm sorry. And it's interesting that, you know, quite often those closest to our heart have the ability to so quickly bring us to our knees. And at the heart of our communication, like we're just trying to say to each other, I love you, but the words that are coming out of our mouth don't seem to get that point across.
So and, you know, it amazes me that, you know, if I spoke to my mother the way my daughter speaks to me, I'd be wallpaper, you know. And it's like, I never would have even thought of speaking to my mother like that. And, you know, after she left home is when she started becoming really, really strange. And, you know, it makes me wonder, who was she all those years? Was she always that person? Was she at the age of 7 wanting to tell me off but just didn't? You know what I'm saying? And it's like she hit like 19 and all hell broke loose.
Well, and it's interesting because I'm sure there's a lot of stories intertwined with her journey getting to where she is now. And again, I have 3 different thoughts about this and your daughter. One is, I wonder what struggles she's having day to day, feeling adequate as a mom, feeling like she's getting to spend enough time with her son, right? Feeling like maybe she's not measuring up and taking some of this out on you. And, you know, because our moms tend to be our safe place for our kids, right? They tend to vent or unload on us, and they don't really think much about our feelings about it because we're just mom, right? You're my mom. You know I love you, and you just are going to hear me out. And I think there's a bit of a transition that needs to happen in our relationships with our adult children where they start to take the time to see us as feeling humans. And I think that that's a little bit of our job. And I'm wondering how you've shared with her maybe your hurt and how she speaks with you, or maybe you haven't to this point.
Sometimes I basically haven't because, on one side of it, I'm afraid she's just going to lay into me again. It's like, I don't want to be afraid of her. I want to be able to talk to her, and it's like, well, she's a hard one, and it's very stressful.
Yeah, I can hear the stress in your voice. It sounds really, really stressful, and I think that the reason that it feels stressful, Judy, is that part of you knows that you have to say something to her, and I think that's a bit of the anxiety in your voice, is that you know that in order to heal this as best you can, you're going to have to challenge her a little bit with, hey, you know, when you speak to me this way, it hurts me deeply. And whether you're intending to hurt me or not, this is how I'm feeling. And I want our relationship to be whole. And I want to know how we can fix this. And there might be a little part of you that's afraid of what she's going to say back. Right? The things you've done wrong or why you were a bad mom and, you know, right? None of us want to hear that. But I think in order to get to the other side of this relationship, you're going to have to be willing to have that conversation, or you can take the other hard task, right? The tough love part, and say, hey, until you realize that how you speak to me hurts me, I'm not going to engage in conversations with you. So you have 2 ways you can go, but I think part of your anxiety is knowing you're going to have to go one of those 2 ways because you can't go like this forever, and you certainly don't want your grandchild to grow up, you know, feeling that tension.
Yeah, and the difficult part is she's really basically my only family right now, and it's like, you know, I'm tired of treading softly around her. I'm tired of having to always, you know, put up my defenses in case she's going to lay into me. And, yeah, she has brought up stuff like what she thinks I did wrong. And it's
overwhelming.
I wasn't prepared for this, you know. As a teenager, she was just always really nice and sweet. And people used to say, oh, teenagers. And I go, I'm not having a problem with mine until 19.
So maybe that is a little clue for you, though, that something went astray at some point, and that the person that she is the person you knew growing up all her life. And there's just something that's not right for her right now. And if you checked in with that and asked her about how she's doing, and that it sounds like she, you know, maybe come to her from the soft place of wondering what changed. And instead of feeling more like you need her to treat you better, maybe the soft approach. But I encourage you to try one of, or two of those. Try it in writing if the one-on-one communication in person feels tough. But please use the metacommunication piece of saying, before I say this, I want you to know that my intention is to love you and be your mom forever. And so no matter what I say here, I want you to know my intention is to say this with love. And if you don't hear it that way, let me clarify it. And then say your words. Because taking that moment to say, here's how I feel about this relationship, and here's my intention in what I'm going to say, you can really help the conversation be more gentle. And then let me know how it goes.
I will. I will use that approach then.
All right, Judy. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day. It's 2:45, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Today we're talking about communication on all sorts of levels. How does it work in your relationships? You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. We'll be back to talk to you.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist here on KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock on the next Fresh Air, Michael Apted, the director of 56 Up, is the eighth in a series of documentaries that has followed the lives of a group of British men and women every 7 years, and it began when they were 7 years old. Also, we talk with Rebecca Luker about her new album of songs by Jerome Kern. She starred in Broadway revivals of Showboat, The Music Man, and The Sound of Music. Join us at 3 o'clock for Fresh Air here on KCBX. The number again to call in to talk to the Reluctant Therapist is 781-3875. That's 781-3875.
I really appreciate the courage that it takes to call in and share your story on the air. But I also really want those callers and those thinking about calling in to know that when you do take that step to make a call and share your story, there's people out there listening right now that are really going to benefit from hearing your story, because there are so many things that we share on our human journey, so many experiences that we share, and that if we talk about them, if we say them out loud, they stop being so overwhelming, or the pain of them can be eased a little bit. Quite often, it's all those things that go unsaid in our lives, get really huge and feel unmanageable and feel like they're overwhelming or will never be fixed. One of those is in couples communications, there is a common breakdown in communication that happens. It's when one person feels like they're always doing the talking or relating or communicating, trying to keep the couple together, trying to start conversations, and the other partner or spouse feels like it sounds like nagging, right? It feels like nagging. She's always trying to engage me in conversation. She's always asking me what's wrong. She's always trying to get me to talk. She's always telling me to, you know, do more. That nagging then causes the person who's listening to withdraw from the relationship, to back off a little bit, to not be so engaged in the relationship. So we call that a pursuer-distancer cycle in the therapeutic world, where someone will be the nagger and the other person will withdraw. And the feminine speaker will say, I nag because he doesn't talk, he doesn't engage, he won't be part of the relationship. And then the husband will say, I withdraw because all she ever does is nag and get on my case, and so I don't want to talk with her. And so how do we stop this negative spiral that gets us stuck? And what happens is that we start to back off from our relationships. We start to look for connections outside the relationship. We start to give up on the connection that we felt in that relationship because it's so frustrating or feels so daunting to try to stop that negative spiral of, you know, pursuing and distancing. And it goes back to one small trick. And it feels so simple, and yet for so many it feels so difficult to do. The trick for changing a negative spiral is to be the person who goes the other direction. to take 5 minutes to sit down and say, you know what, I really enjoy your company, or I really love spending time with you. What can we do together that would be fun? And just by taking that time to connect in a positive way can change the whole cycle of the relationship. Because it's interesting, you know, as I've mentioned before, it takes a lot of trust and courage to share ourselves in a relationship, to open ourselves, to tell our story, to speak our truth. Because once we say what we're really feeling, the other person then has a lot of power. They can either confirm that what we're feeling is true, or that they, you know, will relate to what we're saying, or maybe they won't relate at all. Maybe we'll end up feeling silly. Maybe we'll end up feeling like we shouldn't have said anything. Nothing's worse than sharing your heart or speaking from your heart and having the other person just look at you and say, thank you, or that's nice, and not sharing back. That happens quite often with feminine speakers, because feminine speakers tend to build relationships through sharing stories about themselves, through self-disclosure. And there's kind of this unspoken code in women's relationships that when someone tells you a story about themselves or shares something that they're feeling, that you reciprocate by telling a story or something you feel about yourself or that's going on in your life. And that's kind of a way that women build intimacy in relationships, is through self-disclosure. So imagine how awful it is if you self-disclose or share something about yourself and the other person does not share a story about themselves or relate or connect with you. You can feel really exposed and vulnerable. And when that happens too many times, we start to withdraw from trying to make connections in relationships at all, which can be, again, setting up the cycle of loneliness and the sense of chronic loneliness, or feeling like we don't have anyone we relate to or can share our life or stories with. And one of the things we found is that for people who want to self-disclose, who want to make connections, sometimes jump in a little too quickly, maybe share too much too soon, and it makes other people uncomfortable. So it becomes important that we as speakers, we as people who want to build connections in our life, take personal responsibility for being able to read social cues. How do we know when someone's really interested in listening to us? Are you looking at their nonverbal reactions? Are they smiling and nodding as you speak, or are they kind of looking away or looking at their watch? You know, it's important that as we're talking to someone, that we notice how our message is being received. And if the person feels like they're trailing off, or they're not really asking questions, or not really engaged, that we change what we're doing and maybe ask more questions of the person we're talking to. Maybe take a moment to be more inquisitive about the person who we're spending time with. Sometimes our desire to make close connections causes us to just talk, and we don't make room for a dialogue to actually happen to the person that we're speaking with. So take a moment to think about that. When you're having a conversation, are you sharing and receiving and sharing, or are you just talking? It's something to think about. Lynn, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
My husband... My family's in law enforcement, and my son's applied for law enforcement and has been with a girl for over 2 years, and she has a boy out of wedlock. And everybody's talked about it, that they don't think that she's going to be able to help him through this career, mm-hmm. that if he gets in there, he's going to be too focused on her, or when he gets in the schooling that she'll pull him out and then he'll end up quitting the job because of her, but this is really what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been put to me that I need to step up and make the speech now.
Wow.
Because everybody else has done their part, but I haven't. And because I'm the mom, as you talked earlier to another person, now it's my turn to talk.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you need to say?
That she says all the time that she comes to him with everything that she has, but she doesn't really have anything. She hasn't worked. She got pregnant and had her son when she was 17. She's had a job once for maybe 6 months. You know, she has my son do everything for him. He'll come to the house, watch movies for 3 hours, or three movies at a time. And, you know, you go take care of the boy, you go take care of the boy, you go take care of the boy. and it doesn't seem that she's there for the whole thing. She has him doing everything.
So, Lynn, you mentioned that law enforcement is in your family.
Yes.
That's everybody's been involved. And
yes.
So I'm wondering if this young lady needs to be brought into what it is to be a law enforcement spouse or partner. And maybe she's looking for some guidance, or maybe she doesn't know she's looking for some guidance. But maybe part of your role can be as mentor for her to help her understand what it takes. Because from what I'm hearing, there's a very specific role of support that a spouse plays for someone in law enforcement.
Right. Because you have to, on the side that I'm on, you have to be there and do a lot of things on your own and can't rely on them to do stuff because they have to be so focused on their job.
In order to stay safe, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Or be at work or be at court or be wherever they have to be while they're working. And they can't always be there and be the spousal support that you need all the time because, you know, you have to run the kids here, run the kids there. You have to pay the bills or take care of this or take care of that because you're not able to be with him helping you do that.
So it sounds like there is a learning curve for someone who marries into or is partnered with someone who's in law enforcement, quite like being a military spouse, I would imagine that it is truly a partnership. And I just encourage you to maybe approach this conversation more from a mentor standpoint with her, you know, to assume that her interest, her best interest is in making a great partnership with your son, and give her that opportunity to hear your wisdom and be a part of it. Because as you know, as a mom, the biggest risk we ever take is coming to a place where it makes our child choose between us and someone they're with. And so I encourage you to approach it from more of the mentor and give her an opportunity to grow in the wisdom that you've gained all these years.
Yes, yeah, I've been told to talk to him and give him this insight.
Well, I might take her out to lunch. Start there.
Okay.
And then call me back and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
I appreciate your call.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Hey, Jackie, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist.
Hi, I know you don't have a lot of time left, but your show today has made me kind of stop and think about my own skills as a communicator because I've always thought I was a good listener, and a lot of friends come to me and want to talk about life or their, you know, normal problems, and I always thought I was pretty good, but now that I'm listening to you, I'm thinking maybe there's some things I need to work on. I was wondering if you had any quick tips or one small thing I could work on for the next week.
All right. That's a great question. This is a one small tip for everyone. One of the listening skills that we can utilize is instead of listening and thinking about what we want to say, to listen and respond to what the person is saying with one or two word responses. Like they'll be talking about their weekend and I did this, I did that, to say, oh, so you had a great weekend playing tennis. And they might say, yeah, I had a great weekend. It was really fun. But then I hurt my knee and it was frustrating. Say, oh, you hurt your knee playing tennis. I'm sorry. And to keep relating back to what the conversation is from the person who's speaking instead of trying to relate it back to yourself. And that form of reflective listening really helps to make someone feel heard.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in. And thank you for spending time listening today. I appreciate all of their phone calls. If you'd like to continue the discussion, I welcome you onto our Facebook page. Just go to The Reluctant Therapist on Facebook. Or if you'd like to email your thoughts and any feedback, you can contact me at thereluctanttherapist@kcbx.org. I appreciate your participation in building this community together, and I look forward to talking to you again next week at the same time. Until then, listen fully and connect with others. Tell your story, and remember that you have all the answers inside you. You just need to find a way to hear them. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and thank you for supporting Local Public Radio.